On. Well, good evening, brothers. It's great to see everybody here for another rendition of well, very special Friday with Friday. This is our first event that we've had all together since December, and it's now March. So my goodness, how time flies. Well, today's featured presenter is none other than well, me. So normally when I do an introduction for somebody else, I get to speak in the third person. So it's not going to stop me tonight. So, brothers, allow me to introduce Dave Friday. Brother Friday was initiated into the Beta Iota chapter at Albion College on February 15th, 2002, which means that since the last time we saw each other, I turned 20 in Sinfonia years. After graduating from Albion College in 2004 with a Bachelor of Arts in Mathematics, he joined the Gamma Epsilon chapter at Michigan State University while he worked through a master's degree in mathematics. He was elected CPR of Province 2 in the 2006-2007 academic year and started working as an adjunct professor of math for Grand Rapids Community College. He spent the next 3 years working with Brother Chris Reed to start the Rose Eye chapter at Grand Valley State University. At the province level, after serving as CPR for a year, he held positions of Assistant Province Alumni Coordinator, Province Alumni Coordinator, Deputy Province Governor, and Province Governor. As part of the national emergency declared on June 27th, 2019, he was removed from his position as Province Governor. Shortly thereafter, he published a statistical analysis of the data regarding Province Governor removal to prove with 55% confidence that Mark lied to us all. He is now working through his 10th year as a full-time professor of mathematics for Macomb Community College in Clinton Township, Michigan. He remains very active within the world of mathematics, serving as head coach for Michigan's team for the American Regions Mathematics League and the AMC coordinator, that's the American Mathematical Competition Coordinator, for the Michigan section of the Mathematical Association of America. The title of his talk is Almost Right Triangles and the Almost Pythagorean Theorem. Brothers, I am pleased to introduce me. And there's a round of applause. Thank you all so much. It's so wonderful to be around brothers again tonight. And I'm so excited to be talking about something that I am just this excited about. So first thing I'm going to do is go ahead and share screen. And if you all are seeing the old classic PowerPoint up here, just give me a little thumbs up to make sure everybody is seeing everything okay. Fantastic. Thank you very much. So as the host Dave Friday said, my name is Dave Friday. I'm a professor of mathematics at Macomb Community College in Clinton Township, Michigan. And the title of the talk is Almost Right Triangles and the Almost Pythagorean Theorem. What we're seeing here is a culmination of probably about 3 solid years of what I call recreational research. At the community college level, we are under no obligation to do research or publish papers or anything along those lines. So everything that you see done here was simply done for the sake of funsies. Now, given that it is, you know, a math presentation, if there are questions about the math along the way, I would be happy to field any questions that I can about them. I do have the chat open on my screen and I'll do my best to keep my eyes on it. So if at any point anybody has additional questions, please feel free to let me know. Now, originally this presentation was designed to be given in a face-to-face environment with some papers and proofs and whatnot as sort of an accentuation to the experience. I'm going to do my best to make sure that those are all going to be visible during the presentation. So let's see if we can get these animations working. So the motivation behind all of this, pictured over on the right side of your screen is a good friend of mine by the name of Guyton Van Geisigem, along with his wife, Julie, and their 3 beautiful kids. So Guyton and I were tutors at Grand Rapids Community College. I worked in the math, we called it the math lab, emphasis on math, not, you know, meth, the math lab. And he worked in the calculus and physical sciences tutorial lab. So the original question, which was posed by Guyton, was, can we determine the values of n such that the sum of the first n positive integers is a perfect square? Now, as a reminder, a square number is a positive integer that can be expressed as an integer multiplied by itself. So like 3 times 3 would give you 9. 9 is a perfect square. I thought about the question hard for just a moment. And I turned to him and I said confidently, N=1. And he laughed and I laughed and a whole bunch of people looked really confused around us. So yeah, if you do add the first one positive integer, you get 1, which happens to be the square of 1. So I'm hoping everybody's keeping up with the math so far. Now, Guyton actually had some work already done with it. Now, when I say some work, I would like to describe what it means to work harder and not smarter. Guyton had a notebook, and in his notebook, he had written down N=1, sum is 1, square, yes. Then N=2, sum 3, as in 1 + 2 = 3. Square, no. N=3, sum =6, that would be 1 + 2 + 3. That got him to 6. Square, no. Continue, continue, continue. We get down to line N=8. As it turns out, if you add together 1 + 2 + 3 + 4 + 5 + 6 + 7 + 8, you get 36, which happens to be a perfect square. Now, as I'm putting this information onto the screen, I want to remind you that this is stuff that Guyton did by hand, line by line in a notebook. N=1, sum is 1, and that is the square of 1. N=8, sum is 36, that is the square of 6. Line by line, he went until finally, he got to N=49, one line at a time, for a sum of 1,225, which is the square of 35. Now, I'm not sure that I can really paint an accurate enough picture for what he showed me over the course of the next several dozen pages, but he did find one more. N=1,681, which has a sum of 1,413,721, which obviously we all know off the top of our head is the square of 1,189. Line by line by line, he was able to find this. This drew me to the first conclusion about Guyton's work, which is that Guyton is more hardcore than literally everybody. In addition to, since I met Guyton, he has finished a PhD in physics and now does capoeira recreationally as well, which is Brazilian dance fighting. He really enjoys kicking people in the face, both metaphorically as well as mathematically. So, yeah. So this is where he decided to turn things over to me because he didn't really feel like going much beyond 1,681, as I'm sure you all can understand. So the first thing that I have for you is this helpful little formula. Now, for those that don't understand the formula that you're looking at in front of you, this is a fancy way of saying that if you start with 1 and then add every integer after that, so 1 + 2 + 3 + 4 + 5 + ... wherever you end up, we refer to that number as n. The shortcut for this is n × n + 1/2. There's a classic story about Carl Gauss, who was making trouble as a small child. And so his teacher told him to go add up all of the numbers from 1 to 100. He came back maybe 15 seconds later and said, it's 5,050. To which the teacher said, there's no way that you could have done that. What he had inadvertently done was discover this formula and make use of it. Now, with that in mind, as I mentioned, there are proofs associated with all of this. So if you'll bear with me for just a moment, I'm going to pull up the proof of this. Or maybe I'm not. Nope, I forgot to open that document. If you're interested in the proof, the proof is left as an exercise to the reader. That's always our favorite thing to see in math textbooks. So with this in mind, here are some other important things. Thank you, Brother Kowalski. Humor is something that I find very important in the math classroom. So the two numbers that you saw in the numerator were n and n+1. Now, regardless of what integer you're using for n, when you talk about n and n+1, you are guaranteed to have one of those numbers being odd and one of those numbers being even. You'll also notice in the previous statement that the whole thing was divided by 2. So in my mind, it makes a lot more sense to say whichever one is even, I want to divide that number by 2. Additionally, the two factors in the numerator are what are considered relatively prime. Relatively prime means that they have no factors in common. Rather than trying to prove this, I'll simply demonstrate it. If you take two consecutive integers, like for example, 9 and 10, if you take a look at all of the numbers that go evenly into 9, you'll have 1 and 3 and 9. If you look at all of the numbers that go evenly into 10, you would have 1, 2, 5, and 10. The only factor that they have in common is 1. That definition, according to math, we refer to those numbers as being relatively prime. They have no factors in common. Rather than delving into the proof, we'll go ahead and skip that for the time being and simply rely on demonstration. Next up is a key factor, and that's a pun, so feel free to laugh at that because we're talking about factors here. This one's going to be a little bit more complicated. If the product of two relatively prime numbers is a perfect square, then the two relatively number, then the two relatively prime numbers are both perfect squares. Here is where a little bit of a demonstration is going to be in order. So I'm going to be using the annotation feature on my screen. 900 is a perfect square because if you multiply 30 times 30, you wind up with 900. Here's where I'm going to look for some audience participation. Please feel free to be as participatory or observatory as you care to be here. Can somebody give me any two positive integers that when multiplied together, you get 900?
9 times 100?
9 times 100. Excellent, excellent. What else we got?
450 times 2.
450 times 2. All right, now we're getting places. This is great.
90 times 10.
90 times 10, another good one. Very nice.
300 times 3.
300 times 3. You might notice I'm trying to keep it a little bit organized here, but that's okay if it winds up not that way.
How about 18 times 50? Would that do it?
That's beautiful. 18 times 50 would definitely do it. It's like taking the 10 times 90 and borrowing the 5 from the 90 and giving it to the 10. 10 becomes 50. 90 becomes 18. Very nice.
I'm going to go the other way. 5 times 180.
5 times 180 works as well. Excellent. We're doing great so far.
If I've done my math right, 25 times 36.
That is a good one. 25 times 36.
That's two squares.
That is two squares. Yes. And that actually helps to demonstrate the point that I'm making with this theorem up here. There are a couple more. Yep, James, that's true as well. So a couple more. I'm actually kind of surprised. And Rich, I'm going to give you credit for this one, even if you didn't do it. There you go. 1 times 900. It's important. That's important. We got 12 times 75. Another one to squeak in there. 15 times 60. We also got 20 times 45. And if I've ordered this correctly, I think I got everything in here. So re-looking at our statement that we made here, if the product, did I miss one? Yes. Very good. Oh, actually I missed two. And that is one of them, James. Thank you, or Jim, sorry. So 6 times 150. And then probably the most important one, since this is where the whole thing started, 30 times 30. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the theorem one more time. Well, yeah, that's fair. I still want to have it written down, though. If the product of two relatively prime numbers is a perfect square, then the two relatively prime numbers are both perfect squares. What I'm going to do is keep using the annotation feature, and I am going to put an X through any of these that are not relatively prime. Now, by not relatively prime, I mean they have at least one factor in common. So the first one I can definitely remove, 30 times 30, because they have all of their factors in common. For 2 and 450, they have a 2 in common. 3 and 300, they have a 3 in common. 5 and 180 are both divisible by 5. 6 and 150 are both divisible by 2, 3, and 6. Those are gone. 10 and 90 have common factors of 2, 5, and 10. 12 and 75, well, they have a 3 in common. 15 and 60, they have a 5 in common. 18 and 50, they have a 2 in common. 20 and 45, they have a 5 in common. The only pairs that are left are pairs that were relatively prime to begin with. They have no factors in common other than 1. So let's call emphasis to them. 1 times 900, 4 times 225, 9 times 100, 25 times 36. You may not recognize it right away, but all of those things that are left, they are all perfect squares. 1 squared times 30 squared, 2 squared times 15 squared, 3 squared times 10 squared, and 5 squared times 6 squared. That is what this theorem is stating. If the two numbers were already relatively prime to begin with, and their product is a square, that means that both of the numbers had to be squared themselves. So this takes us to the next most important thing, which, despite what I say in the presentation here, it's not actually the proof. We don't need to go through the proof. So what we're going to do is we're going to take that original expression that we had, which was n times n plus 1 all over 2. The n and the n plus 1, one of them's odd, one of them's even. In addition to that, they are relatively prime. So what we're going to do is we're going to take whichever one is even, and we're going to divide it by 2. The problem is, if we don't know what the value of n is, we don't know which one is odd and which one is even. So we're going to break it up into two cases. The two cases are going to be, if n is even, then that means that n is even. That felt circularly defined. I'm okay with that. So if n is even, we're going to divide n by 2. But because their product is a perfect square, we're allowed to say that that number is going to be a perfect square. I'm going to call it a squared. That is the part that you see right here. Additionally, the other factor in the numerator was n plus 1. That's going to be a perfect square as well. Now, if you do a little bit of math and you get an n on both sides of the equation, if they're both equal to n, we can set them equal to each other. So to solve for n, in the first equation, we multiply both sides by 2. We get n is equal to 2a squared. In the second equation, we subtract 1 from both sides, and we get that 2a squared is equal to c squared minus 1. If we do similar algebra over on the right-hand side, if n is odd, then that means that n plus 1 will be even. So I'm going to divide that number by 2. Well, according to what we just saw, that's going to result in a perfect square, so let's call it a perfect square. Then, n equals c squared. I'm going to ask Rich to solve this one for n. Hey, you did it. Fantastic. It's already done for us. This is great. So we get n is equal to c squared. Now, to eliminate n as a variable in here, there are actually a couple operations we're going to have to do to the first one. First, we'll multiply both sides by 2 to clear out the 2 that's on the left-hand side. That would leave us with n plus 1 is equal to 2a squared. After we do that, we're going to subtract 1 from both sides. That'll give us 2a squared minus 1 is equal to c squared. Now, if we were to get it so that the a squared is by itself, or rather the 2a squared, over here, this one tells us that 2a squared is going to be c squared minus 1. And over here, we'd have to do more algebra. That's going to be 2a squared is equal to, add 1 to both sides, and we would get 2a squared is equal to c squared plus 1. Now, there is a very famous theorem that states that if you take this thing squared plus this thing squared, you get this thing squared. That is the basis of the naming scheme that I decided to use for this. So taking 2a squared is equal to c squared plus 1 or c squared minus 1. We can turn that into a squared is equal to c squared plus or minus 1. Now, probably more familiarly, we don't necessarily have that those first two things are equal to one another. But all the same, we still do get something that very closely resembles the Pythagorean theorem. A squared plus b squared equals c squared. So I said, well, out of respect for Pythagoras, who absolutely invented this, and it certainly wasn't invented centuries earlier by the Chinese, here are some definitions I decided to throw out there. The almost Pythagorean theorem is going to be defined as a squared plus b squared is equal to c squared plus or minus 1. It's in line with the plus or minus 1 that you saw on the previous slide. An almost Pythagorean triple is going to be a set of three positive integers that satisfies the almost Pythagorean theorem. An almost right triangle, or ART, is going to be a triangle whose side lengths are an almost Pythagorean triple. And as a reminder, for those who don't study a whole lot of math, isosceles means that two of the sides are the same. Now, I do make a picture for this, and the picture that I make is like this. Can label the sides. We'll say that this side over here is A, and that this side over here is A, and that this side up here is C. Now, normally for a right triangle, we would do a little indicator at the right angle that it's an actual right angle. Well, this one's not a right angle. It's almost a right angle. So I'm going to make almost a right angle in there. That is the picture that I associate with what I refer to as an almost right triangle, or in this case, an isosceles almost right triangle. So clearing that picture out of here, let's move on to the next slide. So here's my new target. Keep in mind that the original problem was, can we figure out the values of n that we had previously referred to that would actually get us that the sum of the first n positive integers is going to be a perfect square. So if we can find an almost Pythagorean triple, we can find a value of n. Now, the good news is that anytime you want to start something theoretical like this, it's really nice to have some raw data. Then I remembered that Guyton is more hardcore than everybody. So I borrowed his work. So what you see here is, based off of Guyton's work, and without giving away too much information, Guyton had come up with n equals 1, n equals 8, n equals 49, and then way, way in the future, you know, 1,681. And without giving away too many secrets, you'll notice that that's three things followed by one thing over here. Something that that I noticed in Guyton's research is that if you go from 1 to 8, that's about 8 times bigger. And if you go from 8 to 49, that's about 6 times bigger. And if you go from 49 to 1,681, that's about 6 times 8 times bigger. I had a hunch, and the hunch was that I was pretty sure Guyton missed one. As it turns out, he did miss one, but I was able to find it. If you add together 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 6 plus dot, 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 all the way up to 288, you will get 41,616, which happens to be the square of 204. So what I did is I took all of those values of n that Guyton had made, I took them and I plugged them back into the formulas from two slides earlier. So just as a quick for example, let's grab the n equals 8 that he was referring to. And grab the n equals 8, and I'm going to take you back two slides. Three slides. Four slides is what I'm going to take you back. So we just said n equals 8. Well, then, according to what we said here, if n is even, what I'm going to do is take half of that number, and that should be a perfect square. So if we take half of 8, we're going to get 4. That happens to be a perfect square. What does that imply that the value of A is? Well, that'd be the square root of the number that you're seeing. So that would be 2. Oops, I missed 2. Now, in addition to that, that also lets us know that if we were to do n plus 1, it's going to be 8 plus 1. Allegedly, that should be a perfect square as well. And so, what would be the number that's being squared to get us to that perfect square of 9? That's going to be 3. Stephen, thank you for those contributions in the chat. So flipping forward, apparently 4 slides this time. This is how I was able to come up with the fact that for n equals 8, we're going to have a is equal to 2, and c is equal to 3. That's from the calculations that we just did. So I did calculations like that for all of the raw data that was brought to me. So for 49, 49 is odd. I added 1, I got 50. 50 is even, so we divide it by 2. We get 25. Well, that should be a squared. That should be a perfect square, and that's 5 squared. However, 49, because it's odd, should also be a perfect square, and that would give me n is equal to 7. Repeating this process a couple more times, I got all these values of a's and c's and whatnot, and I was feeling pretty good about this until I realized that I had used up all of Guyton's data, which meant that I had to start making my own. Now, I have tried to put this in as logical a fashion in front of you with the hopes that somebody might be able to use their pattern noticing ability to tell me if you see patterns among these values that I'm referring to as A's and C's. More specifically, do you see methods for where we can turn older values of A's and C's into newer values of A's and C's? I'm going to let everybody think about it for a minute because I need a water break.
You can add them to get the new ones.
Kevin, you are correct, sir. Question is, how do we add them?
Well, if you add 1 plus 1, you get 2. So A plus C equals the next...
One sec. I want to give that credibility. If you add 1 and 1... If you add 1 and 1, you do get 2. That's fantastic.
Isn't that something?
It really is. That's why I keep a TI-84 close by at all times. It's fantastic.
And then if you add 2 plus 3... you get the next A, which is 5.
If I didn't know any better, Kevin, I'd say you were onto something.
It's sweet, isn't it?
That's pretty hot, yeah.
Now, rack my brain around 12 and 17. Does that equals 29 now, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Amazing. Okay, so if I add 29 and 41, that's the next A, right?
Allegedly. Let's find out how right you are. Well, that would be 70. So now comes the next challenge. Grant, you are also correct. I'm going to try to put this in here. So Grant is saying that if I were to take this 1 right here and then double this 2 right here, so do 2 times 2 and add it up, we would get 5. And as it turns out, that if I take all of those things and I move them down to the next line, that will still... that's not what I wanted to have happen. This is difficult to do with just the touchpad. So if I take 2 times 5 and add it to the 2 that's right up above it, I will get 12. And if I were to take the 5 plus double this 12 right here, I would in fact get 29. And here's where we can give some additional credibility to both of your statements, because if math is nothing else, it is consistent. What if you double 29 and add it to 12?
Oh, I hope you get 70.
I hope so too. I have this calculator over here if we want to check it though. 2 times 29, that's going to be 58. 58 plus 12 is 6010. Nope, we call that 70. That's right. That would be 70. So as it turns out, both of those patterns are right. Now here's the brilliance about grants. If I do literally that exact same thing over here, it works again. 1 plus 2 times 3, we get 7. 3 plus 2 times 7, you get 17. And 7 plus 2 times 17, you get 41. And if you do 17 plus 2 times 41, you get 99. Now, I want to let you know, Grant, I'm really impressed with what you came up with, because that is the second pattern that I noticed. Here's the one I noticed before that. If you take this one and this two and add it together, you get this three. If you take this two and this three, that's the wrong way. Sorry, I'll try that again. If you take that two and that five, you get this seven. If you take this five and this 12, you get that 17. And if you take this 12 and that 29, you get this 41. So the question becomes, if I take this 29 and this 70, do I get that 99? As it turns out, 29 plus 70 is in fact equal to 99. That's awesome. Now, more importantly, all of this is supposed to obey the almost Pythagorean theorem, that a squared plus a squared is supposed to be c squared plus or minus 1. So there's the real test. Is it true that if I take 70 squared plus 70 squared, that I will get 99 squared plus or minus 1? Well, that's where I grabbed my old calculator and I said, let's find out. Turns out 70 squared plus 70 squared is 9800. 99 squared? 9801. So as it turns out, yes, indeed. A squared plus A squared is C squared plus or minus 1. Oh my gosh, as soon as I found this out, I could not get to Microsoft Excel fast enough. There's no way that I'm just doing all this in a graphing calculator. That's not going to do it for me. So to summarize those two patterns that we just found, these are referred to. Oh, Ryan, dumb question, where is b squared? Just as a reminder from where everything came from, these were referred to as isosceles, almost right triangles, because they were supposed to be the same thing. We will encounter a case that involves some b's later tonight, though. So here are the recursions that we found. I'm using a subscript m, whereas I think, Grant, I think that you had used an n for that, but we were using n for a different purpose. Yeah. So here's how you can generate new a values. You take the previous a value, press the previous c value, you may make a new a value. To make a new c value, you take the previous a value plus the new a value, you get a new c value, the same as what I was doing with the annotations. Also, we're going to refer to this as Grant's theorem for the duration of what we're doing tonight. Those recursions work out just fine as well. So yeah, I used Microsoft Excel, don't hate. It was simple to create a table of data to create as many values of n as desired. Now for this one, I am actually going to stop this for just a moment and see if I can open up the Excel document that I want to have open to demonstrate this. Everybody seeing the Excel document now? So I started with a column of A values and a column of C values. I started with A and A. And you'll notice right up in here for the formula, I said I'm going to take the previous C value and the previous A value and add them together. And then for the new values of C, I said I'm going to take the previous value of A plus the current value of A, and that's going to give me a new C value. And I said, fill that down. You'll notice over here that we get corresponding values of N. And this was what I was super excited to show Guyton, because this solved his problem. These are all of the values of N, an infinite number of them that we can use to solve his problem. So after 1681, the next value of N would have been 9,800. And then after that, 57,121, then 332,928, followed by 1,940,449, and so forth and so on and so forth and so on. We can make as many values of N as Guyton wants. Now, there are some additional things that I have in here, which are a little bit more mathematical in nature. So if you don't follow these, that's okay. For anybody who has studied trigonometry, the isosceles right triangle is also known as the 45-45-90 right triangle. We have two acute angles of 45 degrees that come together with a right angle, and the ratio of the longest side to either of the shorter sides is the square root of 2. The square root of 2 is approximately 1.414213562373. Can't get that from a calculator. If you take the ratio of C over A, you'll notice that we wind up with a convergent sequence of values that converge toward exactly that number that I just stated. In addition to this, I wanted to use Microsoft Excel's computing powers to say, how far away is that number from the square root of 2 after, 16 decimal places? So I created this column. It's called the absolute error and the approximation of the square root of 2. What you're looking at here is essentially the motivation behind Dedekind cuts, which is how you extend the rational number system into the irrational number system. Now, the Dedekind cuts, if you've studied that, cool. Here's it in practice. And if you're thinking Dedekind cuts what? Don't worry about it. You'll notice that eventually these values of the ratio become so precise that Microsoft Excel can't tell the difference between what it knows as the square root of 2 and what we are calculating to be the square root of 2. The first time I gave this talk, the title of the talk was Rational Approximations of the Square Root of 2, an Introduction to Almost Right Triangles. So here we go. I took this to Guyton and I said, Guyton, I figured out an algorithm to make as many values of N as you could possibly want. And he said, cool, and went about his day. And I was like, no. This was like 8 months worth of my life right here that we just condensed to the last, 40 minutes. I was like, No. We need to do more. We need to do more with this. There are more almost right triangles out there. I can feel it. Thus, my slow descent into madness shortly thereafter. So let's head back over to the PowerPoint presentation, and we can talk about what else I wanted to do with this. I'm using Microsoft Excel. We've got to do some stuff. So there are some other fun patterns. For those who study limits, what we already pointed out is that the limit of the ratios is essentially the square root of 2, which I was able to prove. If you take the limit of consecutive A terms or consecutive C terms, you get something that looks a little bit like phi, the golden ratio. Except this one isn't golden, it's just, fun. It's the square root of 2 plus 1, or 1 over the square root of 2 minus 1. And the last one is a little anomaly that requires more explanation than what we should get into now. So, despite the fact that I had solved Guyton's original problem, I said, why don't we have some more fun with this? Why don't we investigate the case of where our almost right triangle has three sides, and the three sides are going to be a shortest side of A. Aaron, you have no idea. The other leg is going to be 2A, and then the hypotenuse is going to be C. Now, it's not an actual triangle. It's an almost right triangle, so we'll put that little symbol in there as well. So that means that A squared plus 2A quantity squared is going to be C squared plus or minus 1. Now, application of this, who knows? I just wanted to do it for funsies. Now, the picture that you see is a man by the name of Yi Jung, who was a student at Grand Rapids Community College at that point in time. And he was able to help me in finding a couple of cases. So 1 squared plus 2 squared is equal to 2 squared plus or minus 1, no problem. 4 squared plus 8 squared is equal to 9 squared plus or minus 1, no problem. And I said, Addy, that was his nickname, Addy, go find me another one. And he said, another one what? And I said, never mind, I got it. Oh, so the one that he's pointing to on the board right there, 17, 34, and 38, that was the one that we were able to find together. As it turns out, 17 squared plus 34 squared is 1,445, and 38 squared is 1,444. So again, just one off from each other. So from there, we had to figure out the recursion. Now, I'll let you know that what we did for the last one is not going to work for this one. Let me use the annotation feature to make a little thing for us here. So we had A, we had 2A, we had C. So first one we found was 1 and 2 and 2. And we found 4 and 8 and 9. Then we found 17, 34, 38. And this was not going nearly as well as the last one, because if you take 1 plus 4, you don't get 9. And if you take 4 plus 17, you don't get 38. And if you take, 2 plus 1, you don't get 4. And 9 plus 4, you don't get 17. Despite all of this, we were still able to figure out a pattern. I'll leave this up here for just a moment and see what your eagle eyes can see.
It looks like you can add from right to left. Yeah, and then go down. And so that means 34 plus 38 is 72 would be the next one?
Well, I can tell you what double 72 is. That's going to be 144. What about new C values?
Cheating by looking at the board, it's 161.
I think I got this one. Yeah.
All right, Ryan, go ahead.
All right. So that 1 plus 8 equals 9, 4 plus 34 equals 38. So 17 plus 144 would be our next number.
Do you happen to know what 17? Well, actually, Brother Angel was kind enough to let us know through his brilliant calculation that should, in fact, be 161. I don't remember this one off the top of my head.
How do you make a formula for this, though? Or can you?
Ryan, it's me. I can do anything I want. So 72 squared plus 144 squared, I am getting 25,921. 161 squared, 25,921. Gentlemen, have ourselves a winner. This algorithm does, in fact, produce more almost right triangles of this variety. So here's the way it works. To create new A values, we add together the previous C value plus 2 times the previous A value. To make new C values, we take the previous A value and take 2 times the new A value. Now, according to the Grant theorem, there should be another way to do that as well. You'll kindly recall that the Grant theorem said take the previous A value and then 2 times the A value, and that makes a new A value, or the C value plus 2 times the C value, it makes the new C value. As it turns out, if you make that multiplier 4, it works for both A values as well as C values. I'm so glad that we have a name for that, the Grant theorem. Love it. So because of that, technology gets to take over one more time, and I get to make as many of these as I could possibly want to. So that's what I did, because why not? So here we see the first couple cases, 1, 2, and 2, 4, 8, and 9, 17, 34, and 38, and the one that we created just now, 72, 144, and 161. And then I said, all right, Microsoft, whoosh, fill it down. Now, if you were to take the ratio of the hypotenuse to the short side of this one, we should get the square root of 5. So we wind up with rational numbers that do eventually converge to the square root of 5. Interesting stuff there. So what do you think? Just call it there or let the madness continue? I think we both know the answer. Continue. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We both know the answer to that. We all know.
To continue.
You got it. You got it, because this feels significant. So once again, we got that those things converge to the square root of 5. If you take consecutive C values or consecutive A values, the ratio will converge to the square root of 5 plus 2, or 1 over the square root of 5 minus 2. So I like this problem. Another! Well, this time, here are the almost right triangles that we're creating. We'll do a leg of A, we'll do a leg of 3A, and we'll do a hypotenuse of whatever it winds up being. Our almost Pythagorean theorem, A squared plus 3A squared is equal to C squared plus or minus 1. I had a hunch on this one, and so I started looking very, very quickly for some of these values. First one was 1, 3, and 3. You'll notice that all three of the cases that we've started so far have had A equals 1 as a valid starting point. 6 squared is 36, 18 squared, 324, add those together, you get 360. 19 squared is 361. I was able to, again, had a hunch. 37, 111, and 117 was the next one that we could create after that. Now I'm hoping that even if we're not all mathematicians, we're starting to see some patterns here. So I got the old 133. At the 6, 18, 19. And then we had the 37, 111, 117. I'm going to refer to this one as the Kevin observation, because it was Kevin that observed this on the last one. If we add, I believe your words were from right to left.
Yes.
Indeed. 3 plus 3 gets us down to 6. 19 plus 18 gets us to 37. And then it was Ryan who pointed out that if we were to do 1 plus 18, well, that gets us 19. 6 plus 111, that gets us to 117. The numbers are starting to get a little ridiculous, or else I'd be asking you, so what's the next one?
200 and whatever it is.
Exactly. That's the point that I'm making is, yeah, is that.
Well, the one on the A side.
228.
Yeah, it's 228. So it, but when you start squaring things like that, they get pretty big.
Oh, you are not wrong, my friend.
Oh my God, yeah.
So as it turns out, that pattern is starting to look real familiar. So according to the Grant theorem, there should have been a way to turn A values into A values and C values into C values. Turns out that it's a 3 up here and it's a 6 down here. So for the first case, it was a 1 up here and a 2 down here. For the second case, it was a 2 up here and a 4 down here. And for the third case now, it's a 3 up here and a 6 down here. I think we're ready to generalize this. Now, I did, of course, once again, have a hooray technology moment where I was able to use Microsoft Excel to create as many of these as I could possibly want. And that is what I'll show you up on the screen right here. So here's a couple that we recognize, 1 and 3, followed by 6 and 19, 37, and 117. And then Kevin here were the values we were trying to get, 228.
Oh yeah.
3 times 228 is 684. And if we add together 37 plus 684, we get 721. And the observation that you made of, as soon as we start squaring these numbers are getting gnarly pretty quickly. Now, if you do take that right triangle, then the long side to the short side ratio is going to be the square root of 10. So you'll notice that this converges to, you know, 8 decimal places really, really quickly. It did not take very long. It only took about, 7 iterations to get to this. That's pretty great. However, at this point, I was feeling, why don't we say peckish? I wanted to generalize this. So more data, more patterns, the limit of the ratio of C to A wound up being the square root of 10. Consecutive A values and consecutive C values were the square root of 10 times, or excuse me, square root of 10 plus 3 and 1 over the square root of 10 minus 3. And then the last one again, don't worry about that here. So now we make the big leap. We're going to start doing this with letters instead of numbers. This is where if anybody wants to abort mission, I completely understand, because math is great until you start throwing out numbers and replacing them with letters. So here's what we're setting up. A squared plus KA quantity squared is equal to C squared plus or minus 1. Then I said, based off of the Kevin observation and the Grant theorem, if we can have one starting case, and then apply an algorithm to it, we should be able to develop as many of these as we could possibly want. So here we have the Kevin observation. We're going to take the adding from right to left. We're going to take the previous C value plus K times the A value. That's going to be a new A value. And then the Ryan observation, that plus that is that. That's how we can create new C values. Or using the Grant theorem, if it's K up there, it should be double K down here. This is not going to create numbers. This is going to create polynomials. At which point, Microsoft Excel is useless to me. So I guess we'll just let it end there. Or you can just do it by hand. And that's precisely what I did. For that, we're going to see much cooler stuff. So here is the generalization. So what you're looking at is what we would have previously referred to as values of C. They're polynomials now. And then down below, these are what we previously had referred to as values of A. Now I'm going to scroll back up so that we can see these hypotenuses, hypoteni. Yeah. All of these hypotenuses. Let me tell you, if you didn't see patterns before, this thing has got patterns within patterns within patterns within patterns. If the polynomial has a constant term, that constant term is always equal to 1. If the polynomial has a k term, then the coefficient of the k term is whatever polynomial we happen to be on. For the first polynomial, it's 1k. For the third polynomial, it's 3k. For the fifth polynomial, it's 5k. For the seventh polynomial, it's 7k. All of these polynomials will only contain either even powers of k or odd powers of k. Hypotenuse, yes, like the plural of goose. There we go. Not to mention, does anybody happen to notice what that first coefficient is in every single one of these?
Power of
2.
It's a power of 2.
Power of 2.
1 times 2 is 2. 2 times 2 is 4. 4 times 2 is 8. 8 times 2 is 16. 16 times 2, and so forth and so on and so forth and so on and so forth and so on. Now we find out who the 2048 players of a few years back were. If you notice all of those.
Oh, yeah. That was fun while it lasted.
Grant, if I knew anything about Python, probably. Unfortunately, programming wasn't a big thing when I was doing math in college in the early 2000s. Or MATLAB or Fortran. Yeah, probably. Nowadays, I'm aware of many more resources that I had, but this research was taking place back in, 2009, 2010? Back when the oldest of those three kids that I showed you was still an infant. That's when this was taking place. Now, with all of those things in mind.
Yeah, math professors, in my experience, still don't really use real computational tools. I learn all that from neuroscientists.
Yeah, that definitely sounds right. So I did want to investigate one more case. The one more case is, what if instead of the legs being A and KA, what if we went to the hypotenuse being a multiple? So by that, I mean, what if we do what Ryan said some time ago and bring in a B? So what if the legs are A and B? And we make the hypotenuse a multiple of A. Well, this led to some more interesting results. Unfortunately, I had a motivation for what I was doing here. And I'll tell you about that disappointment in just a moment. So the base case for this one is actually C equals 2A. This old friend showed up real quick, 1, 2, 2. 4 showed up as well. That's 4, 7, and 8. And 15, 26, and 30. As it turns out, that many of the patterns that we had already referred to, they're still present here. So the let's start with the Peroni observation. 2 plus 2 takes us down to 4. 8 plus 7 takes us down to 15. And of course, after that, we got 1 plus 7, that's going to be 8. And then 4 plus 26, that's going to be 30. So similar patterns to what we had previously seen with all of these. Unfortunately, we're actually trying to solve for the B side here. So we get the 15, we get the 30. We would actually have to take it from 30 back to 26. So it's not that 4 plus 26 is giving us 30, it's that 30 minus 4 is giving us that 26. So with those things in mind, the Grant theorem, well, first off, this is the only case that showed up. A squared plus B squared is equal to 2A squared. It was only plus 1, no longer plus or minus. The recursions, the first one started just fine, but this one involved a subtraction rather than an addition. So because of the subtraction rather than the addition, those polynomials that I showed you earlier, became alternating polynomials. They were combinations of pluses and minuses. So the exact same recursions that we had previously seen, everything's still working out fine. 3 plus 3 is 6, 18 plus 17 is 35, 105 plus 99 is going to give us our next value of A. Once again, subtraction is going to be the way to do it. Now, once again, only A squared plus B squared equals 3A squared plus 1 showed up, no more plus or minus 1. So once again, the recursions involve addition and subtraction, not just addition. Now, once again, we are starting to see some patterns, though, which is that whatever this coefficient is in line with whatever we're choosing for our C. So this was for C equals 3A. The number up there was 3, and the number down here is double that. So this led to a generalization relatively quickly. So let C be equal to KA, where K is a positive integer, and then use the following two recursions, which are consistent with what we saw for the first couple of cases, or using the Grant theorem. So 2K times the previous value of A minus the second previous value of A, or 2K times B, minus the second previous value of B. The results that I got, well, let me show you. Also, I see that since we hit the 9 p.m. mark, we've been joined by a couple more people. Don't worry, I'm just about ready to wrap this up. You'll notice that the polynomials that we get here look really, really similar to the problems that to the polynomials that I had previously shown you. The difference is we now have combinations of addition and subtraction in the polynomials. So as it turns out, those recursions involving both addition and subtraction caused some subtraction to show up in here. Now, this is where the heartbreak comes from. The reason that I had investigated all of this in the first place is because a good friend of mine, my roommate at that point in time, said, there's something you should see. And he showed me all of my beautiful polynomials. He said, do you know what these are? I said, yeah, they're my polynomials. And he said, no, they're not yours. Chebyshev polynomials are what these are called. Now, I know that at least one person in here has studied statistics quite recently and knows who Chebyshev is. So, despite the fact that I did not come up with this myself, I was still pretty pleased with myself to have come up with something that's named for a mathematician. So this is in part due to a colleague of mine who did a special trigonometry project with his. As it turns out, for anybody who's familiar with some of the formulas from trigonometry, we talk about the double angle identities in trigonometry, but what we don't talk about is the triple angle or the quadruple angle or the quintuple angle identities. As it turns out, all those polynomials that I had just generated are the polynomials of the cosines that you see in these identities. Now again, these do have a special name. These are referred to as Chebyshev polynomials. The numerators that I showed you were Chebyshev polynomials of the first kind, and the denominators were the Chebyshev polynomials of the second kind. Turns out that they are solutions of the following two differential equations. The first differential equation that you see is solved by Chebyshev polynomials of the first kind, and the second one that you see is solved by Chebyshev polynomials of the second kind. So again, I was bummed that this thing that I had allegedly developed myself had been previously developed by a mathematician a couple hundred years ago, but still kind of cool in hindsight to be like, well, I came up with it myself, just as this guy came up with it, and now he has stuff named after him. So, you know, you're still hoping for Friday numbers. Now, these are some more mathematical observations. So if you're familiar with de Moivre's theorem for how you can come up with, you know, actual formulas for all of those triple and quadruple and quintuple angle identities that I showed not too long ago, that's pretty cool. But because it's recursively defined, is it actually handy? That is to say, if I wanted to do like the 27th one of these, I would have to do the 26th one. But in order to have the 26th one, I would need the 25th one. And in order to have that, I would need the 24th one. So is it actually worth it? So if we can come up with a better defined formula, it would become more handy. What is referred to as an explicit formula. Turns out we can. And it's terrible. And by it's terrible, I mean they're terrible. There are four formulas, and it depends on whether we're talking about a numerator or a denominator, and whether we're looking at an even one or an odd one. There are four different formulas. I came up with all of them. This part was not fun. Actually, you know what, Dave? I really don't feel like demonstrating the n equals 27 numerator. Anybody who's interested in finding out about the n equals 27 numerator, feel free to talk to me some other time about it. I'll need a stronger beverage if that's what I'm planning on doing. So just a couple thanks for obviously Guyton for starting this problem that has led me down the path of madness for the last 12, 13 years. I don't know. I lost track. Then Addy for helping me continue the problem, Alejandro, my colleague who helped me make the connection, Professor Halfaff at my institution for letting me bounce a couple of ideas off of him, and math for being interesting and making me brain harder every single day. That is the end of my presentation. Now, naturally, going back into host mode for a second, I want to thank Brother Friday for everything that he presented here tonight. And I do want to open it up to any questions that anybody has regarding any of the things that you just saw.
No.
I have a question.
Yeah, Kevin.
Okay, now I'm forgive me if I don't remember exactly what the numbers are, but the first one you did converged on the square root of 2, correct? Mm-hmm. And the second one you did converged on the square root of 5.
That's correct.
And the third one you did converged on the square root of 10.
Correct.
Is there a pattern to those?
Every single one of those square roots that you just identified is exactly one bigger than the corresponding perfect square. 2 is 1 plus 1. 5 is 4 plus 1. 10 is
9 plus
1. Nine plus one.
So the next case after that, 16 plus 1?
Square root of 17 is how that one would converge.
Wow.
So as it turns out in the generalization, those polynomials that you saw would converge to the square root of k squared plus 1.
Cool. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for the question.
Yeah. Do they also keep on converging faster in like some sort of pattern as well? Or because they seem to be converging faster from what we could see there.
My guess is that they're converging faster because they're getting bigger faster. I mentioned that in the first case, as we were developing new values of n, they were getting bigger at about 6 to 8 times what the previous ones were. In the cases where we're dealing with a bigger multiplier, the numbers are getting bigger substantially quicker, which is why it seems like they're converging that much faster.
Okay.
All right. And Bill, I see that you have your check mark, your yes indicated. Is that indicative of a question?
Not really. I'm just saying I approve.
Oh, fantastic. Well, in that case, let me... Let me also approve of me. Very good. Were there any additional questions for the presenter, Brother Friday, before we turn to a more social nature.
Yeah, sure. I had a question.
Yeah, James. Jim, sorry.
No, that's no problem. So, you know, you had the original condition that the sum of the squares was plus or minus one. If you drop the minus one, so if you just have something like, so in your first example, it was like, try to type this too, because it's hard to talk math.
That it certainly is.
It's something like a squared plus 2b squared equals 1. And then in your second example, it was the same thing, like a squared plus 5b squared equals 1. I know I'm changing the letters on you. But,
right. Let me go ahead and share screen over to the PowerPoint, because I think I might be able to address that from this screen right here.
Yeah, so exactly. So you've solved for 1 in both of those equations, basically.
Yes. So what happened with this is it reduced down to this, but mm-hmm. as it turns out, the plus or minus was case specific.
Right.
So in the case that it was a squared plus a squared is c squared plus 1, that's the case of n being odd. And right. if it's a squared plus a squared is equal to c squared minus 1, that's the case of n being even, which brings up a really interesting point, which we can find on slide 11. Your value of a flip-flops. Starts as odd, then it's even, then it's odd, then it's even, then it's odd. The next one after this was a equals 70, which is even.
Mm-hmm.
C, always odd.
Ah, right. So, sorry, what I was going to ask is that particular relationship, you know, shows up a lot in you know, algebraic number theory. I wasn't sure if you'd looked at any anything like that.
Can't say that I have.
Okay, yeah. So the equation that I typed, that I recognized it as like that's the norm of an element in, well, so if you write a number like x plus y square root of 2, so imagine like the complex numbers, but where you're adding the square root of 2 in instead right. of the square root of negative 1.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Okay. I was just going to ask if you'd looked at any connections involving that, because that works out really nice if the number that you're attaching is square free, but then things go bad if it's not.
Indeed. So that is bringing back some memories.
All right. So yeah, I wasn't sure if you'd seen things go bad if you picked that K to be big enough.
Not yet, but I mean, it's always worth investigating.
Okay.
Now, actually, in preparation for the talk tonight, I was actually running through, you know, the numbers and whatnot, and I realized that there's a very interesting connection just among this table. In fact, let me go ahead and share screen over to the one with even more of these values, because I kind of want to test this to see if it's actually true, and I need more data in order to show that it is true. So the observation that I was making is that if you do take the case of where A is odd, so the first case that I want to talk about is 5 and 7. So 5 and 7 can be expressed as the sum and the difference of the same pair of numbers. 7 is 6 plus 1. 5 is 6 minus 1. Well, what's the significance of the 6 and the 1? As it turns out, 1 times 1 gives you the 1, and 2 times 3 gives you the 6. I realize that in this form, that doesn't seem all that exciting. But then I realized that if I were to do the exact same thing at the next pair of odd numbers, 29 and 41, if you were to figure out the two numbers associated with this, that would be 35 plus 6, and 29 is 35 minus 6. Well, where do 35 and 6 come from? Well, it turns out 7 times 5 is 35. 2 times 3, that's 6. I don't actually know if this next case is going to work, but darn it, I want to try it. Where's the next pair of odd numbers? There we go. 169 and 239. So according to what I just said, I should be using these two guys right here. So 12 times 17, that's 204. And then 17 times 5, is that a true statement? The 239 is 204 plus 35. Well, shit. This is going to require some more madness. Huh. Well, it sure was fun sleeping for a while. Now I got this to keep me up at night. Oh boy. That's exciting times, Dave, right there. Yes, sir.
Did I miss it? Was it the two above or one above?
So for the thing that I just showed you?
Yeah, on the previous example, was how many lines above did you go to start?
I think that I can explain that more simply by saying that if you take any two consecutive of these lines, it'll get you where you want to be. So when I did the first line and the second line, that gave me the numbers from the third line. When I did the second line and the third line, that gave me the numbers from the fifth line. And just now I did the numbers from the third line and the fourth line, and that gave me numbers from the seventh line. I don't think it's a coincidence that if you take third line plus fourth line, that gives you the numbers of the 3 plus 4th line.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. As a mathematician, I'm not built to believe in consequence. Or not consequence, sorry. Coincidence. Yeah. That's a really awkward word replacement. I don't believe in consequences.
Yeah, you do.
Great thing about that is that it doesn't matter if you believe in them or not. They're coming to get you.
They come. They exist anyway. Yeah.
Indeed. Well, were there any additional questions that I could answer regarding the presentation? All right. Well, in that case, as the host, Dave Friday, I want to give our presenter, Dave Friday, another big round of applause. Thank you so much for accepting this on short notice and making your threat of bringing in math credible. And so we'll know that that's an emergency backup. I have already had some brothers contact me regarding future presentations, and it sounds like we have April taken care of, May taken care of, and August taken care of. At this point in time, I wanted to keep July kind of open, since that's going to be the last possible Friday with Friday before National Convention. And I'm sure that there will be plenty that brothers would like to discuss at that event. So, Brother Angel, if you would kindly, with the recording.
Recording stopped.